Hi, it's Diane. Great to be back with you. On my mind, the growing list of investigations into President Trump's businesses. With Democrats in control of the House, predictions of further scrutiny into Trump's finances are becoming a reality. Several different House committees are opening up probes into various aspects of the president's business dealings, from questions about how the Trump charity operates to the long-simmering debate over releasing his tax returns. David Farenthold covers the Trump family and its business interests for The Washington Post and somehow manages to keep all of this straight. He joined me in the studio Thursday morning. Good morning, David. Thanks for joining us. There is so much going on these days. Talk about these new lines of investigation that are coming up.
Well, you know, it's hard to even keep track of all of them. Just in the last few months, we've seen a whole bunch of new lines of inquiry into the president's businesses. One of them, a couple of them have nothing to do with Russia or with what's going on in Congress. In New Jersey, the state attorney general is looking into Trump's widespread use of undocumented immigrants as workers at his golf courses. The same thing may also happen in New York, where some of the undocumented workers from Trump's golf courses there have talked to the New York AG. In addition, as a result of Michael Cohen's testimony in Congress, the New York State Department that regulates insurance is investigating apparently whether Trump used inflated statements about his financial condition to basically fool his lenders and his insurers. And in Congress, there's a huge variety of investigations, but just list a few off the top of my head. House Oversight is investigating whether Trump used his power as president basically to block a competitor to his hotel in downtown D.C. by blocking the FBI, moving out of that space and out to the suburbs. He's going to keep the FBI there so that there will not be a new hotel coming in. There's also been questions about President Trump's tax returns. The House Ways and Means Committee is trying to get those. And about President Trump's relationship with Deutsche Bank, his longtime lender. House Financial Services is investigating that. And I think I've just given you maybe a third of all the things that are going on. They just seem to be proliferating by the day.
What about his foreign policy advisors?
One of his big foreign policy advisors is Jared Kushner, his son-in-law and his daughter, Ivanka Trump. That's another area of inquiry spurred by some recent reporting that showed that President Trump overruled his career staff in giving high-level security clearances to his son-in-law and daughter. In particular, apparently, high-level security staff within the administration were worried about Jared Kushner's exposure and possible manipulation by a number of foreign governments with whom he has business relationships. Now, the president's own business relationships with foreign countries, we only barely understand. We may know more soon, but the president has taken a lot of money from Saudi clients, from Kuwaitis, from the Philippines, through his hotels since he's been president. We know he's taken in a lot of money from foreign governments. We just don't know all the foreign governments that have paid.
How come we're going to know more soon?
A couple of ways. The House Oversight Committee seems to be investigating that, as well as it sounds like a weird mix. The House Transportation Committee oversees his hotel in D.C. because the Trump Hotel in D.C. is actually in a federally owned building, which he got a contract to run before he became president. So that's another committee that has oversight of that. In addition, there's two lawsuits going now, one from the D.C. and Maryland Attorneys General, one from Democratic members of Congress, alleging that by doing business with foreign governments at his hotel, Trump is violating the Constitution, which prohibits presidents from taking payments from foreign governments. So in the course of those lawsuits, we may get to see more about which governments exactly have paid Trump.
What about the Trump transition?
You know, your listeners probably know the Trump inauguration took in huge amounts of money.
I
can't even tell you off the top of my head. I think it was maybe $100 million.
Wow.
Huge, far more than any other inauguration had ever taken. And it did far less, at least visibly did far less with that money. You remember Trump's inaugural crowd was not that big. His inaugural festivities were not any grander than previous administrations. So the question had always been, where did that money go? And also, the people that gave money to that inauguration, did any of them get favors in return from the president?
Is there any speculation about where that money went?
So a lot of it went to the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C., where they paid apparently huge amounts of money. This is based on other good reporting, I think by ProPublica. the Trump inauguration paid Trump's hotel huge amounts of money to reserve ballroom space and rooms and other things around the inauguration. Now, the inauguration is a time when every D.C. hotel gouges its customers. I mean, this is like a college town's graduation, except it only happens every 4 years. So the fact that the D.C. hotel seems to have charged extravagant rates even for an inauguration shows you how really high that was. So basically, the allegation is that Trump used the inaugural as a way to, which is theoretically the inaugural is a nonprofit, used that as a way to funnel people's money into his own pockets.
There are other committees also launching other investigations after Michael Cohen's testimony. Tell me about what's going on.
Well, it's a long list. So I mentioned the New York insurance regulators that are looking into this allegation that Trump inflated his net worth to lower his insurance premiums. I mean, there is a statute in New York State that you can't provide false information to insurers as a way of getting a benefit. Whether this applies in that case, one thing I've heard from experts is that these false financial statements from Trump were so ridiculously false that no thinking person would have taken them on their face. So maybe that undermines the case for fraud that was too exaggerated to be fraud. But then, in addition, there's been some questions that have come out of that from House Oversight about whether Trump's lawyers edited Michael Cohen's testimony to sort of Cohen is going to prison for, among other things, lying to Congress about the Trump Tower Moscow negotiations. And Cohen said in his testimony, "I was told to edit my testimony in a way that made it wrong by Trump's own lawyers." That's an allegation. I think that hasn't been proved yet. Cohen also, let's see, he also described a purchase of a painting by Trump's own charity, the Trump Foundation. This would be the third time, if it's true, that Trump had used his private charity to buy artwork of himself. That's already produced, the first two cases have already produced a lawsuit in New York State from the New York Attorney General against Trump. If this is true, it might be added to that lawsuit.
How large is his charity?
It was never very big. It was a weird charity in that it only ever had $1.5 million. Well, no, take it back. It only had about $3 million at the most. But it was called the Donald J. Trump Foundation. Most of its money in the last 10 years did not come from Trump. Most of its money, oddly, came from Vince and Linda McMahon, the wrestling moguls. Linda McMahon, also known as the Small Business Administrator under Trump. They gave $5 million to the Trump's Foundation in 2007, 2009, and have never explained why. It's far more than Trump himself ever gave it. So for many years, Trump was giving away and spending Vince McMahon's money.
What about this fellow, Alan Weisberg?
Alan Weisberg has worked for the Trump Organization since the 80s. He was Fred Trump, Donald Trump's father. He worked for him, and then he worked for Donald Trump. The Trump Organization was always set up to be a small group of family members and longtime loyalists. This is not a bunch of like high-flying Wall Street people that come in, work for the Trump Organization for a few years, and then go work for Goldman Sachs. People came in and they stayed, and they were rewarded for loyalty and silence. So the idea was you would keep the information about how the company actually worked among a small number of people and then keep those people close. And the two people I would have said who were the two non-Trumps that I would have said embodied that ethos 2 years ago would be Alan Weisselberg and Michael Cohen. Both of them had been on the inside for a long time and knew a lot about what the business was doing. Now Cohen is out. Weisselberg is the CFO of the Trump Organization. He is the essential person. You could take Donald Trump Jr., Ivanko, out of that business and it would still run. You can't take Alan Weisselberg out of it. He knows everything about the finances. He touched every financial part of Trump's life, the business, the charity. It was all like Alan Weisselberg kept the checkbooks for all those things. So if you're going to find anyone who understands the real financial underpinnings of the Trump Organization, why, you know, where its money came from, what its money was spent on, Alan Weisselberg knows all of that.
Has he been called to testify?
He hasn't been subpoenaed, but a number of committees are interested in talking to him, partly because Michael Cohen said his name over and over again. I think I tallied up 30 times
Alan
Weisselberg's name was mentioned in the Cohen hearing. He's the one who knows everything. And he has spoken to investigators. It's not like he has taken this oath of omerta and he's not ever going to speak about the Trump Organization. Weisselberg talked to Southern District of New York prosecutors under a limited immunity last year to describe the payments to Michael Cohen as part of the Stormy Daniels hush money scheme. Weisselberg also talked to the New York Attorney General in their investigation of the Trump Foundation, in which Weisselberg basically admitted several different instances where the Trump Foundation seems to have broken the law. So Weisselberg is not somebody who will go down with the ship for Trump. The question is, what will he say now? What will he say in public? What will he say in private? But if you're going to understand how Trump's business worked, you don't need to interview 100 people. You need to interview one, Alan Weisselberg.
the one thing that goes back to the campaign are Trump's tax returns. And we've never seen them.
We've never seen them.
He simply refused, the first president in quite a while, mm-hmm. to do so. So are we now going to see his tax returns?
Well, you have to define now. We're going to see people asking for them. The House Ways and Means has asked for them, or is preparing to ask for them. And there is a law from the 1920s that says that the Senate committee and the House committee that write taxes can request the tax returns of any high-ranking White House official, including the president. So Ways and Means is that committee in the House. They're going to do it. The question is, you know, obviously Trump's not just going to hand them over. What kind of legal battle will result, and how long will that legal battle take before Trump's tax returns are given over? The one thing that people always ask me, what will we see in the if we ever get them? What will we see?
And who does them?
An accounting firm called Mazars, used to be called Weiser Mazars. They're kind of a B-team accounting company based on Long Island. They've been Trump's tax accountants, or his accountants in general, for years, going back to the 80s. Just as a sense of what kind of things might be in them, I have seen the tax returns for Trump's foundation, Trump's charity, which are prepared by the same accountants.
Small
charity, exactly. Yeah. But they have to file a public tax filing every year, and it was done by the same accountants. And in those documents, there were a number of things that were wrong, and in some cases, wrong in a way that obscured a violation of the law.
Give me an example.
Well, okay. So a few years ago, when Trump University was, remember Trump had this university that people claim was a scam. It was under fire in a lot of different states. This is like 2013, I think. Pam Bondi, who was the attorney general in Florida, a Republican, was considering whether to join an ongoing lawsuit suing Trump University for fraud. It'd been started by the New York attorney general. During this time, Bondi's people solicit a campaign donation from Donald Trump. Donald Trump gives the campaign donation, $25,000, but he pays it not out of his own account. He pays it out of the Trump Foundation. Now, that's against the law. You can't use – it's like one of the basic rules of charity. You can't use your charity's money to give political contributions. And so at the end of the year, when it comes time to file the tax returns for Trump's foundation for that year, Trump's accountants leave that donation off. So Pam Bondi's political committee was called Justice for All PAC. They write on the tax return that Trump gave a $25,000 contribution to a real charity called And Justice for All. It's based in Kansas. It has a similar name. They basically just put that charity in instead of Pam Bondi's political committee. So if you're the IRS scanning that sheet, it looks like a legitimate donation to a real nonprofit. But in fact, that notation was completely wrong. That donation, that group in Kansas never got the money. Now, we're told the official explanation is that was just a series of unrelated, by chance, clerical errors that led to that false listing being put in that obscured the real illegal listing. But if that sort of thing happened in Trump's personal tax returns, you could be looking at some serious liability.
Now, a quick break. When we come back, more from David Barenthold.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
And we're back. Here's the rest of my conversation with David Barenthold. He is a reporter for the Washington Post, covering the Trump family and its business interests. As a reporter covering all this, I don't know why your head isn't just spinning. How do you keep track of it all?
Well, I mean, it takes a lot of spreadsheets. We spend a lot of time in our job creating spreadsheets of facts about Trump's taxes, or, you know, Trump's charity, revenue from his businesses, the relationship among his businesses, people that are guests and employees of his businesses and members of his clubs. It's required 2 years of building up just tons of documents so that we can organize this information, find it again when we need it. Trump Organization is very weird. It's got its tendrils on a lot of different businesses, and it touches a lot of different people, but it's very doesn't say very much about itself. So a lot of our job is just trying to keep track of what we know about it so that we can understand, you know, we can eventually see the big picture. And I feel like after 2 years, I'm almost there.
And Trump supporters would say that you, the Washington Post, the New York Times, are doing this to persecute Donald Trump.
Well, you definitely hear that. So there's two things I would say about that. One, we've never had a president like this. It's hard to compare coverage of Trump to Obama or Bush or anybody else. We've never had a president who brought a business with him into the White House, who owned a business, and not a business trading stocks or selling spiral-bound notebooks. A business that is built on hospitality and membership and access. The Trump organization, what it sells, what it sold before was membership in a golf club, membership in Mar-a-Lago, membership, you know, in the Trump card, which is like the loyalty program for Trump hotels. It's all access. And now you take that access-based business and you bring it with you into the White House. Trump still owns this business in the White House. And now it's selling access to him personally, because he goes to a lot of these clubs, but also to his good graces if you put a lot of money into his properties. So he's brought this business into the White House and it's created this private channel for influence over him. Just today, we saw this story in ProPublica where a dentist from Scranton, Pennsylvania, who is a member of a couple of Trump's golf clubs and hangs out at Mar-a-Lago, has an idea for overseeing dental spending at the VA. He writes a note to Trump, because he has access to him because he's a member of his club, on Mar-a-Lago stationery. And the note begins, "Dear King." And he describes all these things that he wants Trump to do. And that gets passed on to the VA. So there's a real connection, a private channel of influence that Trump has built up where he makes money selling access to himself. We've never had a president like that. And to understand that, you can't understand Trump's presidency unless you understand that.
You know, it's interesting because prior presidents who have huge stock portfolios or huge investment groups have managed to put everything in a blind trust so that the office of the White House is totally separate from those. Has Donald Trump done any of that?
No. He has handed over day-to-day control of his businesses to his sons, Don Jr. and Eric, and also to Alan Weisselberg, who we talked about earlier. But he has kept ownership of his business. He's continued to visit them. He's continued to talk about them. He knows where they are. Who knows who their members are.
And continued to receive profits.
Yeah, the money is his. So if you pay money to the Trump Hotel in D.C., the money goes in the president's pocket. So there's nothing blind about this. There's no separation legally between him and his businesses. He says he's handed over day-to-day control, but he still owns all of them.
Is there anything illegal about that?
No.
I mean that the money continues to come to him.
So if you were the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury, you could never do this, right? If you were a USDA official in Pennsylvania, you could never do this. The President and Vice President are exempted from these laws, from federal conflict of interest laws, because the theory is that voters choose them and voters understand, you know, this is a decision made by voters. And also that the president couldn't recuse himself from one thing or another. Presidents have to deal with everything. So it's not illegal in that way. The illegality, if it's there, it's a question of unconstitutionality. The Constitution bars presidents from taking payments from foreign governments and also from individual U.S. states. And if Trump is doing that through his businesses, you know, that's a matter for judges to determine if that's violating the Constitution.
So isn't that where Maryland and Virginia come in on this so-called Emoluments Clause?
Yes. This is it's a part of the Constitution that was basically untouched for 200-plus years because other presidents stayed so far away from the line of taking payments from foreign governments. Trump jumps right over it. And his argument is, well, if I rent the government of the Embassy of Kuwait a ballroom to have their National Day, which has happened three times now, then they're paying me for a service. They're not giving me a gift. You know, the framers of the Constitution intended to ban bribes. I'm not being bribed. I'm selling a thing. They got a ballroom in return. So it can't be an emolument. We'll have to wait for a judge and probably several different levels of judges to rule on that to know if he's right.
So who are you most anticipating hearing from next?
Weisselberg, definitely. Weisselberg, who knows everything that happened within the Trump organization and the Deutsche Bank. Deutsche Bank has been Trump's main source of loans over the last 10 years, or one of his two main sources of loans. They've given him loans on huge properties, even after his multiple corporate bankruptcies, even after he once stiffed Deutsche Bank and cited the 2008 financial crisis as an act of God to avoid paying Deutsche Bank. He sued them in federal court, that they still loaned him money. And I'd love to know more about why and what they saw there that no other bank did.
So Weisselberg, do you believe, will testify before a House committee voluntarily, or will he have to be subpoenaed?
I would bet that he will be subpoenaed. I do not know.
Why?
Well, the Trump Organization, it seems like they are trying to decide their approach to this. How confrontational will they be? And I feel like we haven't gone far enough down this path to know. Past investigations, as I said, in Southern District of New York, the investigation of Michael Cohen, the New York AG's investigation of the Trump Foundation, Weisselberg did talk. But this is a different matter. It's a it would be public testimony, far more wide-ranging. I think Trump Org, if he's going to continue to work there, will tell Weisselberg, you know, this is what we want you to do, and he'll have to decide whether to listen. It seems like Trump Org hasn't said, you know, hasn't put up the stone wall to say, no, we're not going to give you anything. I think they're still working out their strategy. But I think it's probably likely that Weisselberg will at least make them subpoena him.
I'm really concerned about the father, his two children, who have been operating the Trump property, and now, because he is not a legal person in this country, he's been fired. What's going to happen to him?
We don't know. You describing this case, the story we wrote about yesterday, there was one of Trump's golf courses. So many of Trump's golf courses had undocumented immigrants for a long time, even as Trump ran on immigration, even as he got in the White House and tried to crack down on immigration.
How many would you say?
Well, I think there are 12 Trump golf courses in the U.S. We know of undocumented immigrants at least five. There could be others. We know about them when the Trump Org fires them.
Do you know the number of those?
So far, we have talked to 33 undocumented workers from Trump's golf courses. There's probably a lot more. Golf courses, this reporting all started in the winter when golf courses have a really small staff. Normally, the staff expands a lot in the summer to cut the grass and deal with the golfers. So there could be a lot of other people that we haven't found yet, you know, who don't know they've been fired yet, because they'll come back for their seasonal job and find that it's gone.
And surely the president could say, well, I wasn't in charge of hiring anybody.
Totally right. He set the tone, though, and I think so remember, he said hiring undocumented immigrants, taking advantage of their low wages, is terrible. It's a moral wrong because it drives down wages for American workers. It puts American workers out of jobs. If he wanted to put that sentiment into practice in his own company, if he had wanted to cost himself a little bit of money to walk the walk on that, he could have enrolled in E-Verify. It's a federally available database where if you enroll, you can check instantly whether the immigration documents you've been given by your employees are legitimate. He didn't do that. He enrolled it in a few places, including North Carolina, where it's required by law. He didn't do that at these places. Well, in fact, he did even less than he was supposed to. A lot of the workers have told us when they showed up with fraudulent documents, the Trump managers would say, that fake is no good. Go back to Queens and get a better fake. You know, I can't hire you with that. So they clearly saw the advantage in hiring undocumented workers. You can pay them less. They're not going to leave. And took advantage of that for a long time. Some of these workers have been there for 10 years.
And you're saying that comes from the top down.
Yeah. One of the ex-managers from a Trump golf course told us, you know, it was don't ask, don't tell. You know, we want the benefit of these people. We don't want the extra hassle of trying to hire legal workers. So the one guy you're mentioning, Juan Quintero, he was an undocumented worker who worked at Trump's golf course in Dutchess County, New York, and also was hired for a side job by the two Trump sons, Don and Eric, to work on their private hunting retreat, which is a short distance away. Basically, they had a shooting range and some woods to shoot deer. So he got hired there and made a little extra money, felt very proud to be working directly for the president's sons. And then, and he thought everybody knew he was undocumented. How could they not know?
For how many years?
He had worked for the Trump golf course for 8 years and for the Trump hunting retreat for, I believe, 3 years. Even at one point, they asked him at the hunting retreat, can you give us your social security number so we can get you a debit card to buy, you know, seed for the crops and stuff for the hunting retreat? And he didn't respond because he doesn't have a social security number. And they just gave him a social security number. They just gave him a debit card in somebody else's name. The debit card showed up with some name he'd never seen before. So he thought, okay, well, they understand the drill and they know I'm undocumented and they're okay with it. And then all of a sudden this year, early this year, he was fired. So he's lost both of his jobs working for the Trumps. And as you said, his children are worried about him being deported. He's worried about being deported or finding another job. A lot of these folks we've talked to that were fired from Trump golf courses after many, many years of feeling safe there, they don't know what's going to happen to them now. None have been deported, none have been arrested, but they're kind of in limbo now.
You've been looking at all these threads. You've been putting up note cards, doing all this. What are you most interested in learning now?
I would say three things. One, what foreign countries have patronized Trump's businesses and in what way? What do they pay for? What do they get? Number two, to understand the source of Trump's money for the last 10 years. We wrote a story last year about how Trump had made this incredibly unusual decision to buy a bunch of properties in cash over 10 years. He bought $420-something million worth of cash property. So without buying real estate, without taking out mortgage loans. So he bucks his own history, the real estate business's decided practices, spends all this money in cash on money-losing golf courses. I'd like to know how that happened and why.
Money-losing golf courses.
Trump Turnberry, the golf course in Scotland, has cost him over $200 million and never turned a profit. And he hasn't taken out any loans. So how does he have the cash to keep dumping money into that? And I think the third thing would be, how are people using, who aren't countries, who are companies or interest groups, how are they using Trump's businesses to try to influence him now? We had a story over the last few weeks about T-Mobile, the cellular company, who is trying to get a merger approved before Trump's government. And the day after they announced the merger, nine top executives from T-Mobile show up at Trump's hotel. And they check in again and again and again. They pay really high rates and they stay a long time. Is there anybody else doing that?
I mean, that's just sort of really intriguing. These nine fellows showing up and staying night after night after night. What do you interpret from that?
We just got some more data about this yesterday, which said that before the day they announced the merger, they had only T-Mobile top executives had only spent two nights total at Trump's hotel. It had been open for like 16 months. They'd spent, you know, two of them had spent one night each. The day after the merger's announced, nine of them show up. They've spent at least 52 nights in the hotel since then, $195,000 worth of spending. It's hard to see that immediate increase right after they need something from Trump and not see an attempt to lobby or influence his government. T-Mobile says it's just sort of coincidence. They just like this hotel. It's right next door. I would love to know if they have made sure that message got to Trump. You know, if you're spending a lot of money to stay at his hotel, how do you make sure he knows? And whether other people have tried the same idea, it can't just be that T-Mobile thought of this. We know about them because we got a leak of documents from a Trump hotel that showed that they had all checked in that day. But the documents we have aren't complete. Other people may be doing the same thing.
So somebody at the Trump hotel wants this information out.
I mean, you have to infer that, yes.
You have to infer that, absolutely. So how has the public responded to your articles? What kind of mail are you getting?
Mostly I get a lot of really nice responses and I get a lot of tips. There's so much out there that people know about the Trump Organization that I don't know. And one of the wonderful things about writing our stories a little bit at a time is you get more tips.
Interesting. Where are those tips coming from?
All over. I mean, sometimes it's people who did business with the Trumps, people that Trump's tried to get to give him a loan, people that used to work there, people that work for his competitors. I mean, the great source of information about the Trump org is not usually the company itself. It's the people that they touched and the people they dealt with that have a little view into their business. So, you know, and sometimes you don't know what those people, who those people's names are until they find you.
Finally, do you see impeachment ahead?
I have no idea. I think that Democrats certainly want to investigate Trump, and they just got started. They certainly want to investigate all these pieces of Trump's, what Trump has done. The Mueller report, I think everyone has said, we don't want to really talk impeachment until we see the Mueller report. That will come out, God knows when, maybe next week, maybe 2 months from now. So it's hard to judge until we know more. I don't see Democrats wasting, it just, this is me putting my political pundit hat on here, to spend time impeaching Trump, unless there is like some sort of smoking gun, you know, some obvious evidence, to spend time impeaching Trump over the next 2 years rather than like building a political case to beat him in 2020, I think they see that as a mistake. I think they see their best chance at getting Trump out of office as defeating him in 2020, building on the momentum they had last fall in the November 2018 elections, rather than trying to impeach him. Just because the Senate's not, unless we find out something we really don't know, this majority Republican Senate is not going to vote to convict Donald Trump in an impeachment proceeding.
David, thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all for today. I'd love to hear what's on your mind. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. You can find all our podcasts and even old Diane Rehm shows at dianerehm.org. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineers this week are Cliff Gallagher and Natalie Uroglipker. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you on Tuesday. I'm Diane Rehm.